Welcome to Purdue Crop Chat, a regular podcast from Hoosier Ag Today and the Purdue University Extension Service, featuring Purdue Extension soybean specialist Dr. Sean Castile and Extension corn specialist Dr. Dan Quinn. On this episode, Dan and Sean share more about their research from this past year and what they've learned for 2025.
We're still teasing out a lot of our short stature corn work. We had some interesting data this year where we had a hurricane remnants roll through in southeast Indiana and knocked over a lot of the tall corn, and the short corn was still standing.
This podcast is made possible by the Indiana Corn Marketing Council and Indiana Soybean Alliance. Your Indiana corn and soybean checkoff investments are working to find new markets for your crops through international demand, new uses, and research. Learn more about the programs working on your behalf at yourcheckoff.org. Now your host for Purdue Crop Chat, Hoosier Ag Today's Eric Pfeiffer.
Welcome in. Thanks for joining us on the Purdue Crop Chat. This one not coming to you from the Indiana Corn and Soybean Innovation Center. We couldn't make it happen. And what I understand is that the Purdue Crop Chat has become so wildly popular that Sean and Dan are on speaking tours so unimaginable that they just cannot meet with me in person anymore. They're just constantly on the road. From Pennsylvania, Dan Corn Quinn. Hello, Dan.
Hey, Eric. And for some reason, we never get paid extra for these speaking tours. We just, you know, happen to be put on them.
So. Well, that makes sense. You know, extension. You're there to extend. Not necessarily your life or anything. Just, you know, extend yourself. That's what it is.
I think what it is that Purdue knows what troublemakers we are. They said, please take these guys, get them out of Indiana for a while, go to Canada for a couple times, go to New York, go to Pennsylvania.
And on cue, there's soybean Sean Castile. Hello, Sean.
Oh, I couldn't wait to get introduced. How are you doing, Eric?
Oh, just fantastic. By the way, Dan, are you at, State College today? I thought maybe you were in Scranton, PA. Taking in all the sights from the office.
No, I'm in State College, Pennsylvania, though.
Okay.
Home of James Franklin, as I say, the Penn State football coach. That's where we are.
Okay. Sean, you're not necessarily on the road today. I just know you're quite busy today, but you've been on the road. A lot happening for you as well.
Yeah, I happen to be on campus today, but a handful of meetings already talking about the research season coming up, what we're going to do, what we learned from last year. But yes, definitely been on the road. That song, I've Been Everywhere, man, is certainly the case. Canada twice and North Carolina next week. So yes, I'm right there in the thick of it as well.
And I see that you've got your NC State shirt on. So you're well prepared for your trip back to North Carolina, huh?
Well, you know, I'm double unified here. I got my Purdue agronomy hat on and my NC State shirt on. So, You know, I'm calculating which way I go. And again, I figure they're not in the Big Ten, although who knows what the Big Ten really is anymore. North Carolina State might make it. Yeah, coast to coast.
You never know. How many times you're going to have to change that commercial? You never know.
They got pretty creative whenever it became, you know, 11 and 11 was embedded in the 10 and all this. But, I mean, I've lost track where we're at. So, yeah, big conference, that's what we're a part of.
38 now, I think. I don't know. It's crazy. At some point, that's going to have to become like a 240-second commercial to fit all the schools in. Now let's talk agronomy here on the Purdue Crop Chat. There are a lot of things going on. Here we are, February, early February. We're not that far away, amazingly enough. We've got Commodity Classic coming up here soon. We were just talking. We've got our planes booked here, hotels all set and ready to go, and we'll be getting together. We'll get together. We'll do a show from Commodity Classic. I just saw Mark Legan the other day, and I said, you know, we're going to have to get you on another show again. He was on with us last year from Commodity Classic. I said, you know, I'm having a hard time giving Sean a hard time all the time. We're going to have to get you back on the show. And, you know, I need someone else to back me up in giving Sean a hard time. So,
well, he did a good job of that. I don't know if we can get him. He's pretty famous. He's on the front of the Indiana soybean and corn post magazine. So I don't know. He might be too good for us.
That's quite.
I did a county meeting and Mark was there, so he was there were shots fired from him to me on the in that meeting, so
Well,
very
good.
good taste.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Equal opportunity. So no, we'll get down to Commodity Classic here at the beginning of March, and we'll do another one from there. But I think here, and again, I don't have any of the numbers in front of me, but I think it might be time to review where we did come in. I hope you guys have numbers in front of you of where we came in, where we finished 2024, because those did come out here last month, and I don't believe we have really spoken much since then. So maybe we need to go back and review some of the numbers that you guys gave for final yield numbers, some of your guesses throughout 2024. I'm trying to think of some of the wild ones you gave. Let's see, Dan, you were what, 275. Sean, you were at 75, right? That's what you guys had thrown out there as guesses.
No, mine was a solid 62, if I recall.
Oh, is that it? Is that it? Where did we end on soybeans, Sean?
62.
Did we end up with a record? 62?
Yes, we did.
How
Yes, we did.
about that?
I looked, and maybe I haven't seen an update. Maybe I'm wrong in this one. I looked in the January, and I didn't see any updates compared to the November. So maybe I missed it because I did look the last couple of weeks and I hadn't seen anything beyond the November update.
Okay.
And corn's been, I don't know if there's a final report or what. So if you look at like corn, right, it was kind of an odd trend. It was, they state record and then they shot it up to 209. And then I think the final reports actually came in below 200, 198 in the state. Kind of up and down from the corn side. Thought it was going to be state record and then it wasn't a state record in 2024.
Well, I mean, what are you hearing as you go around the state, and what are you hearing as you go around the country? Because this corn crop in particular, Dan, it did have, just as the numbers indicated, a very up and down end to the season there.
Yeah, I think, general sentiment has been it was a good year, but not the best year. I think a lot of that was attributed to the way, kind of how harvest went in terms of how dry it was. I think, we probably lost a few bushels when it got so dry. And then you add into the aspect that, I had farmers harvesting corn at 12, 13%, which is really rare. That something like that happens. But there was also, a lot of disease out there. Tar spot was pretty rampant in certain areas. Talking to Darcy a little bit, I know like eastern part of the state, they're, predicted 40, 50 bushel losses in some of those fields with some of those farmers and in areas of the state. So I think, tar spot was confirmed in all 92 counties this year. So I think, that was a combination of that and just a combination of just how dry it got to the end of the season. And, that kind of tracked with some states. I know Ohio had a pretty rough go at it with rainfall and issues there. But I mean, across the board, pretty good, and there's some good yields out there. It just kind of depended on, where you're at and what the weather was like when, and also when it hit, kind of in that life cycle of that corn plant.
Sean, there's some, not that this is a policy podcast anyway, but we had some legislation that would allow, some Illinois counties to become part of Indiana. If we could, kind of take that Northeast Indiana and let Ohio annex some of that, our statewide numbers might be a little bit higher, right?
Yeah. Well, I'm not going to get into a nice, good debate here about taking over another province or county or city or land mass or water mass. I think that might be a bit much. I did go through and for some reason I didn't see the annual report when I looked last week, but I found it. So to give you the number, so we did drop the same way that the corn number dropped down. We end up at 59 bushels. Flat for the state average, which was still good, not a state record, but still good, about 7% above yield trend.
Well, again, I think that some of those problem areas, as we look at, you can kind of point to certain parts of the state, that northeast part of Indiana. It's been a struggle for several years now up in that part of the state, right?
Yeah, I had a conversation with one of the growers in the Northeast and North Central, and you know, when you get a week of 12 inches of rain during planting season, and it turns off dry, and then you don't get planted till late May anyway. So it's hard to yield well when you get those kind of conditions, and then you throw some of that insult to injury that we had with September being so dry, and some of that, you know, came in a little bit earlier. So stands a reason that they've had a little bit harder time, and we dipped down on that yield level.
As you go around, Sean, you've talked about, you know, all the different trips that you've been going on. What are you hearing from folks as you go around? I mean, really, Indiana had it pretty good compared to a lot of these other states. What are you hearing when you go around and talk to folks?
Yeah, I think we did, right? And we had good yields, still weren't the best, but we certainly had our own pockets that struggled. But if you look at the national scope, you look at you know, our neighbors to the east, Ohio, they had a rough year, just dry. I mean, drought status that came in so early, and you know, they still did fair. They did 50 bushels for a state average, and that's not bad considering how bad it was with the dryness, and then the remnants that came in from the hurricane that added a little bit of precocious germination and seed loss. So we had some of that occurring as I've traveled around further north. It's these extremes that keep coming up more and more, the extremes of a lot of water to no water, and this happy median, this happy average just doesn't occur anymore, right? And I think that's been our new normal, and that we've got these pockets of a day or two to plant and day or two to spray. In some cases, this year we had 6 weeks of good harvest, but we're harvesting 9% moisture. So I think this roller coaster of lots of rain, little rain, and dry and hot is continuing to be the main story.
And it's largely, it can often make or break you on when it happens. And I think that's the challenge with it, right? I think, you know, this past year we had some really good corn yields in areas where we caught that really heavy rain right as pollination was getting ready to hit, and really caught it when we needed it. But there's other sites that, you know, one, the dry conditions maybe crept up a little bit too early before the crop was finished. Yeah, you know, talk about some areas that had disease pressure. So we see these large variations of when things happened, whether it be rainfall, dry conditions, you know, different stresses. And it, what's interesting is really seeing how much it can swing yields one way or the other based on when it happens. You know, you could be a couple counties away and you may have planted a little bit earlier or you know, been in a different situation and that weather really helped you, but in other areas it may have hurt you. So I think that's what makes it pretty tricky year in and year out.
Well, I'll go with one site that we all struggle with, and a soil that Blount Pewamo types that are in the east central part of the state. And, you know, those just can just be just really challenging soils. We can yield well, but boy, you've got to have it work right. And I'm thinking back, I just pulled up a slide set that I had some yield from there, and we were running low 70s to upper 70s there. And that's a soil that sometimes we just struggle to hit the 60 bushel mark sometimes. So again, that timeliness of that rain or the lack of is really critical.
I go back to a podcast that we did with Beth Hall, the state climatologist, and talking about the weather and just how it has changed in you know, this conversation. We talk about, you know, and you know, talk about climate change, talk about whatever you want to call it, but it just has been a little different in that these pockets of, you know, it's much harder to give. You know what? We're going to see rain across northern Indiana today. It's not that simple anymore. Like it used to be, you could see, all right, we're going to see 2 inches of rain across northern Indiana. But now it really is, we could see 2 inches in a field that is here, and then 2 miles away, we're not going to see anything. And that's what
it's been 2 hours.
Yeah, I mean, it really is just that different than the way that it used to be, and that's what makes this whole thing really quite interesting, and that's why you see these pockets of yields in these areas that it's sometimes like, how does this make sense when you're going through and you're trying to figure it all out?
I was in Ontario twice this January. Again, I don't know why I agreed to go to Ontario in January, not once, but twice. But have you know, I went to warmer weather every time. It was warmer in Ontario than it was in West Lafayette. In that, one of the first times, double crop soybeans has been something that's talked about up in that area for a number of years. I talk about it, have people talk to me about northern Indiana, Michigan, and Illinois and Ohio. But one of the comments, my counterpart up there was commenting that they've documented 200 to 300 extra heat units that they've gained over these last 10 years. And so, I mean, there are these changes that are occurring here as well as up there. And okay, and how do we capitalize on that? How do we capitalize on more growing season? And so they're able to do double crop up there. It's not the way that we think about it in a Midwest, Southern U.S. type arrangement. Because I always ask them, so what's success for you? And they're like, well, 15 bushels. So like, okay, that's over break even profit. You know, it's not 50 bushel beans. And I think about Southern Indiana, we can get 50, 60 bushel double crop beans easy. But they're at another line item, if you will, of inputs and potential profits by playing that change in weather.
Man, I was going to say just, you know, what you look at the variation in rainfall and just how challenging it is, and just the sheer amount of headaches that we run into from a management standpoint, you know, whether it be nutrients and trying to manage, you know, something like nitrogen fertilizer, but then you bring in the disease standpoint too. I mean, we had issues this year in corn where the highest levels of tar spot were in areas that had never really had tar spot before. And so, you know, you think about trying to predict anything and trying to manage around that is nearly impossible with just how difficult and the variation, the variability of the timings and the frequency and the magnitude of these weather events.
You're listening to Purdue Crop Chat, brought to you by your Indiana Corn and Soybean Checkoff organizations. Visit yourcheckoff.org.
What are you up to up there in Pennsylvania, Dan? Chatting there at Penn State. What are you up to there?
I'm actually at our corn improvement conference. So, you know, we put a bar on, you know, the door for any soybean agronomists. They're not allowed. So
I thought you were going to say you put a bar just so you could talk about the subject. It's so boring. You had a cash bar or a free bar.
Nope, it's our secret club and no soybean agronomists allowed. There's a sign on the door as you walk in. So
fine, I wouldn't want to be there anyway.
Yeah, it's a corn improvement conference. It's kind of unique. It's was originally the Northeast Corn Improvement Conference, so it's kind of run out of Cornell and kind of the northeast part of the country. We kind of had some meetings and said, hey, is there a way we can maybe move it a little bit more to the Midwest and get some more north central involvement in this conference? Just, you know, a lot of new corn agronomists have been hired, you know, across quite a few states here. We hosted this conference at Purdue last year. So I was the lead host. And then this year, my counterpart, Daniela is also, leading from the Penn State side. So yeah, conference is at Penn State, but it, you know, a good opportunity to bring a lot of the corn researchers and corn agronomists together, and kind of discuss what we're seeing and talking about maybe some future research.
What are you hearing there? Is it a similar story than what, you know, what we're seeing in Indiana across the country, or did we fare a bit better than most?
Yeah, I think, you know, overall we fared a little bit better than most, but, you know, some of the eastern parts, you know, was able to talk to, you know, some folks from Maryland, and, you know, I actually did some meetings out in Delaware this year out in the Delmarva, and I think they had a pretty good year, some pretty good yields out there. You know, Again, Sean mentioned Ohio. Ohio really took it on the chin this year, just with how dry it was in the state. And Pennsylvania had some of those issues as well. Actually, been up in upstate New York this year too, and talking to the folks at Cornell. And again, it's largely just pockets, right? It's variable. You got some areas that did very well in certain spots, but then some areas that didn't do very well. Tar spot kind of has reared its ugly head no matter where you go, it seems like now. But again, I think, Indiana, in the grand scheme of things, when you look at the other states, maybe outside Illinois, that always has those super high yields, I think Indiana did pretty well, and we're sitting pretty well in comparison to quite a few other areas.
Let's take a time out here on the Purdue Crop Chat. And you mentioned, going around talking about your research. And I know we touched on it on our last podcast. You've had a bit more time now to kind of go through some of that research. I want to touch on that again because, this is the time to really dig into some of those results. And that's what you guys are doing here for Indiana farmers is doing that research and conducting that so that, maybe we can learn a little bit of something here for next year. So we'll talk a little bit more about that research and kind of what folks should have on their mind here as we get set for planting season, which some folks might really get into next month, as much as Sean may say, no, come on, wait a little while, a little
or
bit
they
longer,
already have.
a little bit
I did
longer.
get a, I did get a text message on Monday saying, hey, we got 300 bushel beans planted already, so we'll see.
Already? Okay. Well, let's take a time out. We'll come back. We'll talk about that right after this on the Purdue Crop Chat.
I'm Matthew Chapman, and I farm in Henry County, Indiana. Indiana Soybean Alliance and Indiana Corn Marketing Council invest checkoff dollars into building demand for corn and soybeans internationally. I've seen this work firsthand, and it's been eye-opening to see the growth in these markets, which also brings dollars back to our farms. Promoting U.S. corn and soybeans and increasing global demand is critical to the success of farmers right here in Indiana.
This message is brought to you by the Indiana Soybean and Corn Checkoffs.
We're back on the Purdue Crop Chat. Eric Pfeiffer here from Hoosier Ag Today. Dan Corn Quinn out in PA. And Soybean, Sean Castile, still here in WL, down there on Purdue's campus. We're all here on Zoom together today as everyone is just traveling like crazy. Myself included. Heck, I'm off to D.C. here soon, and then we're all headed out to Denver for Commodity Classic this year. We're headed somewhere new this time around. They needed somewhere a bit bigger to put all that equipment and, quite frankly, all the people that keep showing up to Commodity Classic. It keeps getting bigger and bigger, so they had to go somewhere not quite as warm. Let's hope we don't get snowed in out there. Well, knock on wood. But we're headed out here to Commodity Classic at the beginning of March. Speaking of March coming up, gosh, planting season right around the corner. Before we get into plans and what folks should be looking at, maybe we should go into what goes into making some of those plans, and that's some of the research that you two do. Sean, let's start with soybeans. Let's start with what you're doing. Obviously going around, doing all of these speaking engagements, talking about some of your research. Again, we touched on it on the last Purdue Crop Chat, but just talk about some of the research, some of the things that you learned here from this past year that you are really thinking about here as we go into 2025.
Yeah, as we go into 25, I can't help but think about this playing field of prices that we're at. We're always going to want good production, good profitability, and for the most part, I can just play in the production world. In most cases, if we get this good yield advantage, it's over a 2 or 3 bushel, and it's kind of a no-brainer that it's going to pay. But I mean, you certainly have to put that in balance. I think about those that are making decisions on the varieties and seed treatments and trying to just shave that a little bit. So I make the comment, I want to echo it, that some of these seed treatments we don't always need, right? And they're nice to do the add-ons, and it continues, oh, for only $5 more, or for $19.99, we can get this little additional treatment. But I want to make sure that people are aware of what they're actually putting on, what their need is. Things that I continue to just beat the drums on, timely planting of soybeans. We have broken state records in the last handful of years. This year was good yields, but not state record. But timely planting is a part of that, and part of that program is getting a good seed treatment that helps to protect that seed, in particular on the disease front. One of the kind of the new learnings that we are anticipating, we just get it on that preliminary side. It's no secret that I've been doing a lot with sulfur and soybeans over the last 5, 7 years. 2 years ago, I noticed some differences with SDS, Sudden Death Syndrome, disease severity with and without the sulfur. And so I worked with Darcy this year and did some planting date studies, inoculated with an SDS inoculum and with some sulfur treatments. And some pretty good indications early on here that that sulfur is helping in some level of disease protection control. We're on that preliminary side, so I just put all that together that, hey, let's plant timely, get the seed treatments that are good for the seedling diseases that are out there. If you haven't been playing with the sulfur side, there's definitely the play for the fixation boost that I've talked about for years. But now there's even another potential play with some help on the disease front. So that's kind of exciting to get on that cusp of that new idea.
Now, Sean, I ask you this every year because I want to make sure we're all on the same page here. How early is too early? How late is, not early enough? We talk about timely. I like how you're never, early planted soybeans. It's always timely. You're always very careful about that. You're a very careful man, soybean Sean Castile. But how early is too early? At what point is it early planted soybeans for you instead of timely planted soybeans?
I'll take a play from my corn agronomist friend here, and I think he had a very pointed two bullets on some of his talks recently. And Dan, you can even chime in. What was your two bullets?
Soybeans are
Oh no! I set you up. No.
it's
No,
complicated and I don't know. Yeah, that's
it's I don't know from Dan Quinn, and it's complicated, right? That's his way. He had to have two bullets to say it depends. I still have the it depends answer, but timely planted soybeans. So we definitely need to be thinking about it in the April period. We have soil temperatures that are marking around that 50 degree mark, and looking to go up is a good spot. I know that there's plenty that push it a little bit even earlier than that or more suspect. But in those situations, we've got to make sure that we're getting a stand established. And so if we're going in April just because it's April and the seed bed is just open seed slots, you can live with it if you get timely rains. But if you don't, boy, that is just going to follow you all season long. So usually I'm one of give me an April planting. It can be within a couple of weeks, depending on the place in the state and the type of soil. March can do well. We have some growers down in southern Indiana that were able to do March last year. That's certainly that latitude, that 4 hour drive south makes a big difference compared to what we'd have up here. I had a friend who just shot a note on Monday, say, I got these beans planted, and long story short, I was like, oh, how did you just do that one pass? He's like, no, I didn't even do that. It just 65 degrees felt like I should say something. So April's normally a spot I start thinking about it. Tax day is kind of like, okay, if I haven't got them in the ground and the fields are getting pretty fit and close to it, I'm going to be willing to pull the trigger.
I have to ask because, people look at that March and they're like, all right, yeah, it's starting to go spring break. They're like, I can do spring break.
Yeah, I've done those. I've had colleagues, I've had fellow industry agronomists, and we'll have the text message back and forth, and they'll rub it in. I got my March beans in, and they're at the same latitude as me. I said, that's okay. My beans haven't lost their stand yet. They're still in the bag. And I think Laura over in Ohio, I mean, that's one of their studies. They're looking at really push planting dates and have that super early. I mean, I will say March is definitely early. April, it can be early, it can be timely, it depends on the field conditions. But she's got some March beans that were really struggling because of stand establishment, the cold temperatures, the frost freeze, I think stand establishment, it was crazy low in the, I don't know, 40, 50,000, something like that. So I want a good stand. You got to have plants out there. Obviously, beans can branch and make up a lot of ground, but well, that at least gives them a fighting chance to get a fairly uniform stand and emergence.
Dan doesn't have to worry about it. We can plant corn in June and still be okay, right, Dan?
Still want to plant it earlier than that.
Oh, okay. All right.
You want to pay the gas bill for everyone else, Eric? I think everyone else will be okay with that if you want to pay the gas bill.
If I'm a propane salesman, plant June and maximize your maturity out. But I think, corn, I think there's, time and time again, we see there's quite a bit of flexibility on that planting date when you get into May, but you are going to lose some of that potential. Every day past, I think, May 1, right, and a lot of the work's been done that sees there's some potential loss. We don't say it's actual yield at that point in time. But, corn and Sean will give me a hard time on this crop all the time. But corn just, it doesn't like sitting. It doesn't like, coming up non-uniform. It doesn't like, where the crop next to it is coming up before it. It doesn't like, oh, there's missing plants. It can't compensate as much as the soybeans do. I really get back to the planting conditions for corn and really paying attention to those, because I, even in my only been at Purdue about 4 years now this spring, and the amount of just even in that 4 year period, the calls that I get of a farmer saying my corn looks like crap, and then we go out there and it immediately goes back to the planting conditions and what happened during planting, whether it be compaction or just, poor stand or non-uniform stand, and it just tracks throughout the rest of the year. It also sets that, Sean alluded to this a little bit earlier, just, some of the more basic management practices that, can set up a crop to be a lot more tolerant throughout the year. You look at, a corn that has a strong root system, corn that, gets off to a good start, is largely going to be a lot more tolerant to stresses later in the year. I think that's really important. But planting conditions, it's hard every single year. We go through this every single year. You got to be patient. Even from my side, I get impatient when we get in the spring and in our trials. You want to go. You've been sitting around all winter. You want to do it, and you want to get the planter in the ground. But, time and time again, if we can just wait a little bit, watch those soil conditions, watch those soil temperatures, if I can get that crop out of the ground quickly and uniformly, it just gives us a much better start and many times allows us to tolerate a lot more of the stresses as we go through the year.
And also, you get a little trigger happy here because you don't want soybeans to beat you again. Who won the planting belt study between the corn and soybean agronomist? Who won that again?
No comment. Yeah, I plead the fifth. Yeah, so, Sean and I did the trial. We're kind of collaborating with Ohio State on this project where we plant the exact same day. So Sean and I did that this year, and soybeans, yep, had the highest yield with the first
April 22nd, next when we were out there, yep.
And corn, and I actually did a talk with Michigan State and recently, and Manny up there had similar data, and he's seen very similar. And we've kind of seen this with a lot of the states that corn, a lot of times that earliest planting, if it's late April, mid-late April in that period of time, typically is lower in yield than that next planting, which is, might be early to mid-May. So we often see that yield response will be down, then it'll go up, and then it'll go down. Soybeans seem a little bit more consistent where they stay high, and then start to drop from there. I do think what's also interesting, just looking at this data, and I'd like to, eventually get more from the Indiana side, but the corn, what's interesting is you kind of see a little – soybeans do a lot better with that really early planting date, but you see a little bit more of a – I would say more extreme drop off in yield when you start waiting a little bit more with corn. So the overall yield decrease really starts to decrease as we get to that late May and get into June, where soybeans still kind of, The yield is decreasing, but the actual slope of the decrease is not as extreme, and that's something we've seen in our data just from this year. But actually, as I gave this talk in collaboration with the folks at Michigan State, and they were sharing their data at the same time and saw a lot of the same thing, and I think the Ohio State people as well. So that's there might be a caveat there where yeah, it's plant soybeans first. Okay, you move to. You're deciding as you go along into May, actually, maybe you need to switch back to corn because that yield drop off might be a little bit more extreme. But I'd like to get some more data on that side, but have found that to be pretty interesting.
Dan, what other research have you been looking into here as you've been moving here throughout the winter time and going around giving your chats around the country and getting ready here for Plant 2025.
Yeah, I think we're always doing stuff on the fertility front. As we always say, corn person will always work on nitrogen, and I'll be talking about nitrogen for 40 years. But that's job security, right? We just keep inventing new nitrogen problems. So that's a big piece, in terms of. One, always just paying attention to, the headaches with nitrogen. Nitrogen is very expensive. It's one of the top variable costs. It's one of the highest, yield influencing inputs you can have in corn. So it's important. It's also a problem from environmental aspects and stuff like that. But we've done a lot of work with inhibitors and stabilizers. You look at, the infrequency of rainfall and conditions. I think there's some plays there with just kind of trying to keep it a little bit more consistent with nitrogen availability and helping with some of that. It's not perfect, but I do think they can help in certain situations. Been diving into, re-examining a lot of seeding rate stuff in corn, really from a spatial side. Found some really interesting. We've been working with about four to five farmers this last year. We're going to have a few even more farmers next year. Just really diving into, the spatial management of seeding rates, and is there a play or is there not a play with some of the variable technology and variable seeding rates? We've kind of been really in history been pretty, static on our seeding rate recommendations, but we keep getting the question, for farmers, especially on the corn side with the corn planters today, it is so easy for them to vary seed rates and they want to do it. So it's trying to give them some guidelines, some information, just a little more data on that side to try and, dial that in. I worked with some farmers, a farmer up in Marshall County in Northwest Indiana that he really only needed 28,000, 29,000 seeds per acre and some of his lighter ground up there, and they got pretty dry. But we had another farmer that, he 34 to 36 was the best for him in some areas of the field. So trying to tease a lot of that out. We got a, long way to go and a lot more data to collect on that side, but just trying to understand that a lot better, because seed nitrogen, that is where the money is and the expensive piece on that. And so those have been some of the big ones. We're still teasing out a lot of our short stature corn work as well, so that's always an ongoing trying to understand that. We had some interesting data this year where we had a hurricane remnants roll through in Southeast Indiana and knocked over a lot of the tall corn and the short corn was still standing. So did find that pretty interesting. So, but yeah, a lot of different results, a lot of different data that we're still trying to process and share.
I was actually going to ask about the short corn and
yeah,
how far away are we? I know that, the big thing there obviously is yield, How far away are we from getting yield on that short statured corn closer to where it is on the tall stuff?
Yeah, it's close, from my standpoint, but it's still, a lot of our data when we don't have what we saw last year, we had the lodging. Southeast Indiana, the short corn out yielded the tall corn a lot of the plots, but the tall corn fell over. So, keep that in mind. A lot of our cases where we manage them similarly side by side, we some hybrids, some years we get it, yield is pretty comparable. Some years it's not. So, we've had it be 10, 15 bushel lower than that tall corn. I do think we're still trying to understand, do you need to manage it more? I think The seeding rate probably needs to be higher. That's something, but you add in the cost. What's the additional cost of the seed and the cost? But we have, found that you kind of have to manage it a little bit more in terms of the higher seeding rates to get that yield to be comparable. We've actually found it pretty interesting that, we've worked with about four or five different short stature corn hybrids, and they all differ in their, both yield potential and even their aspects of how short they are. So that's been an important piece. But I would say what's been fascinating is, it's a pretty big architectural change in the corn plant, and the yields are close. Now, and many times they're either the same or lower, but often I think they're a lot closer than what I thought they were going to be. So I think there's a lot of potential there. Again, we've only been working with kind of a first generation conventionally bred short stature corn. You bring in the biotech version that's coming from Bayer and Corteva. I think there's, some indication that has, in terms of yield, ear height and yield potential is a little bit higher. I mean, there's still a lot of questions with it. I think, but I think in certain situations, certain areas, certain management systems, I think there's a play there. It's just we just have a lot more questions, a lot of things we got to figure out yet with it.
And Sean, how are those tall statured soybeans coming along?
Well, we don't want them too tall. I actually think we want the nice compact ones. And we've joked around that corn and soybeans is going to be eventually planted at the same seed rate and just be done, right? So even though,
I really thought that we were going to get some really tall soybeans, and maybe we could start getting 198, 200 on soybean yield. I mean, no.
Yeah, you think about it, just doubling the height, that's we'll go from 62 bushel beans to 124. We'll get there, no problem.
You can't
they gotta
you
stand
can't,
though.
You can't make that happen. I mean,
yeah, well, we're not going to trellis them like the tomatoes, so but no, I think one thing that's interesting on the corn front, Dan, on that short corn, the biomass that's produced, so the yields are pretty similar. Biomass is going to be pretty similar as well to the tall stature normal corn, right?
Yeah, biomass is very comparable. I was actually, we had a fall residue study this year, just looking at, total residue amounts and soil coverage residue amounts, and we had short and tall corn in that. I thought, hey, let's look at that. And actually, we've done whole plant samples, and we've also looked at it from, corn stover as well, and actually very comparable amounts between the two hybrids. So I do find that very interesting that, it's basically the full stature corn. It's almost like you just sat on it, right? Just kind of scrunched it all the way down. But yeah, in many cases, the biomass is pretty similar, nutrient uptake pretty similar in terms of amounts. So yeah, there's a lot of similarities. You often look at it and go, there's no way that the biomass is the same, but actually it kind of works out that way many times.
So what you're saying is that you're still going to cause havoc for my soybeans, all this biomass, all this root ball
Yep.
that I'm going to have to contend with, that our growers have to contend with, it's still going to be there. So
Yep.
thanks for nothing, Dan. I appreciate it. So knowing that we need to move forward with good stand establishment and just deal with all that residue. So
Yep, I was just looking at preliminary data this morning from looking at residue, and yeah, sorry, Sean, we still haven't been able to lower that for you.
that's all right. That's all right. We'll do skip row planting or something to get us there.
Well, guys, as we wrap up this episode of the Purdue Crop Chat, what should farmers be thinking about now? Is again, we're getting kind of close. We're not that far away here. We're in early February, and again, we're headed to Commodity Classic here soon, and a lot of planning is underway right now. People who don't know better call this the off season. You and I, we know there really is no off season. Sean, what do you say?
No, there is not an off season. I think, again, we're always trying to make a good profit, good production, and this is no different. And so I dare say this is the year that you can look at things, as long as you've got providers that are willing to help supplement that, right? The idea of let's look at this in a way to say, does this have a benefit or not? Because we've got a handful of years where it's pretty easy just to throw some extra treatment on the seed or extra pass or tank mix. And I don't think we're able to have that luxury anymore, at least on this season, the season to come. So of those that you want to look at, have a reason for it. Is it, got something that helps with a nitrogen supply that's a biological, or it's something that's helping with some disease that you've had issues with? And yeah, let's do the direct comparison. I think that's a big thing. Make sure it's set up in a way that you can learn from it, and then make a decision for the 2026 crop is saying, yeah, I'm going to go full field on this or not.
Dan, what say you?
Yeah, I think, we'll say this every year, but I think even in, when we have prices not as good, and farmers hate this answer, but just, the sticking to basics, right? If you do the basics really, really well, and you talk about pH and P and K levels, and good hybrid selection, and as Sean talked about, the traits that you need and the seed treatments that you need. And just having a reason to make applications, and instead of just, well, I'm gonna apply this and that and this and that, and maybe it'll give me some insurance here, insurance there, or not. I think sticking to those basics, and in many cases, if you do those well, you'll have really good yields, and getting off to a good start, and being able to tolerate stress as well. Do I need four fungicide applications, or can I do well with just one really well-timed one at Tassel? So I think, paying attention to things, you always should pay attention to things close, but I think even more so when prices get this way. I always say the best farmers that I know do well when prices are good. They also still do pretty well when prices are down. It's just a lot of organization, planning, paying attention to things, managing things, really closely, and having a justified reason to make some of those applications. And then on, the other side of it too is continue to test things. I think that's really important, even from, say, a seeding rate side or a nitrogen rate side, or some of these products here and there. Hey, maybe I can get away with a little bit less than what I've been applying in the past, or things, maybe this does help or this doesn't help. I think you always need to be fine-tuning your operation, and but having that justified reason to do things, I think is really important.
I'll see you guys in Denver, and like I said, hopefully we don't get snowed in, and hopefully no one breaks a leg out there skiing. I'm not bringing the skis. I've never done it before. I don't intend to start now. I don't need to break bones. They're already, I feel like brittle. I'm not that old, but I feel old, so I'm just not going to test it. So.
Taking your calcium supplements, aren't you?
Yeah. Drink your milk.
Yeah, I do, but I just I've got an old soul. I feel like I probably just have old bones too, because I just feel like an old man most of the time. So,
Yep. No bunny slopes for you. I'm
yeah.
there too. I'm not going to do that. I tore my ACL skiing many moons ago, so no for me as well.
Yeah, snowball fights might be it. If you get pelted with one in the side of the face, I'm just
Yeah.
saying, I'm a pretty good shot. From distance, you'll
Can
never
also
find
be
me.
80 degrees, and Denver could be 80 degrees. It could be snowing. You never know.
You never know. All right, guys, I will see you out there, and we will chat again then. Thanks for doing this.
We'll see you.
All right. Thanks, Eric.
This has been Purdue Crop Chat, a regular series featuring Purdue Extension's Dr. Dan Quinn and Dr. Sean Castile, made possible by the Indiana Corn and Soybean Checkoffs, the Indiana Corn Marketing Council, and the Indiana Soybean Alliance. The checkoffs are pleased to help bring you agronomy insights from Purdue Extension. Opinions on the podcast are those of the host and guests and not those of the sponsor. Purdue Crop Chat is a service of Purdue University Extension and Hoosier Ag Today. Timely, relevant, credible.